Let's learn a little bit about Will Bernard. In those formative years growing up, what were your more formative experiences, your inspirations? You do draw from a lot of different players and genres.
I grew up in Berkeley, California. They have a jazz program there that's still continuing, and so many great people have come out there from there. And I was there with Peter Applebaum and, at the time, and Stephen Bernstein also, who they both moved to New York, and then I made it out there a little bit after they did. But growing up, there was really just so much stuff going on in the Bay Area. I would get, you know, I just follow my nose, and I would. There was a program called Center for World Music. When I was a teenager, I was taking gamelan and going to lots of Indian music concerts, and you know, I just got exposed to all the world music when I was 15. You know, and at that point, I'd been studying jazz and I'd been into classical music, and then I ended up just wanting to be a composer, so I went to UC Berkeley and studied classical music composition. And then after I came out of there, I didn't know what I was going to do. So I just started picking this thing up again. And then Peter Applebaum had a group called the Hieroglyphics Ensemble, which he started when he was 18. He was a prodigy. He started playing drums at age 3 and picked up piano and then saxophone. And then he was writing great big band music by the time he was 16. And so I joined that group, and we made a record with Don Cherry. It was the first group record we did, and then we did some touring, and then from there, I mean, it's a long, I could go on and on.
Right,
that was my early years.
Now, I wonder that, working with Peter as such a talented young person, that must keep you humble in a certain way, but also give you a chance to work with someone who's always going to be pushing you.
Yeah, I mean, Peter is like, I still, like, every time I hear him play, I'm just like, what is this guy doing? You know, it's like, just such a musical, amazing musical person. Have so many people like that, I feel like, that are, and in New York, there's so much music all the time that you go out and you need to go home and practice.
Now, I wonder, you've been in, I think, Brooklyn for about a dozen years or so.
Yeah, exactly. Why does this guy know so much about me?
That's my job, man. Do you find the city inspirational, or the people in the city, the players, the musicians you're working with?
Oh, well, the musicians, of course. Yeah. That's a... Yeah, I live in Brooklyn. It's a beautiful place, you know, beautiful neighborhoods. And, yeah, you know, I grew up here, you know, in Bay Area, so it was just a nice change, you know, to be somewhere where everything's different, you know, for a while.
Yeah, for sure.
And then I don't know, your probably next question was about New Orleans, right?
Wow. How does this guy know so much about what I'm asking? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you were just there, as a matter of fact, and you've got some real good connections in New Orleans.
I just got back from Jazz Fest, where I was playing night shows, I think 12 nights in a row, and getting back home around 5 or 6 in the morning, and starting up and doing it again, going to rehearsals. But I've been doing that for, I think it's 17 years now, and I've developed lots of relationships through that. Every time I go there, I meet new people, and, you know, oh, this is a new band, or this is a new association I'd like to be involved with, and there's a couple new ones this time. And there they have like annual, like I've done the same gigs with Stanton Moore. Do you know, you guys know Stanton Moore, the drummer?
New Orleans drummer.
I've had the same like Thursday gig, I think, with him for 15 years or something. So I just can write it in the calendar for next year, you know. So
must be nice to have those groups of people in so many cities that you kind of have regular gigs.
Yeah, it is true, and I've been coming up here a lot and playing with these guys. There's an amazing scene here, as you know, and I think I found some of the best guys around here.
I would agree. Now, as a traveling man, I wonder if you have a routine for when you go to city to city. Are there, like, specific food or drink places that you like to go back to, your favorite spots, or is it all about the music when you get to a new city?
Now you got me on the spot here for Seattle, but I just kind of follow my nose, and these guys know where to go and as far as food. So,
how did
but
you?
But yeah,
hook up
you
with
know, in New Orleans, that's another situation.
Right, right. How did you hook up with these two characters in Seattle? Was it through mutual friends, or
we met in New Orleans, probably? Right, I think.
Yeah, once. Mm-hmm.
I think it was in Scarrett. McTuff was there down there. Yep.
Right. Yeah, the Skerrick connection.
Yeah, Skerrick. Who I met Skerrick, I think it was 1994 at a Bumber Shoot. I was playing here with, we got this last minute gig with TJ Kirk, which is a group I had with Charlie Hunter, and we played the Opera House with Critters Buggin.
Oh boy.
Double bill. So like, okay, these are guys we should know, you know.
Welcome to Seattle.
And then Skerrick started coming down to San Francisco all the time. He was really involved with the scene there.
Now, as a composer, I'd like to ask about the first song we heard today was yours. And I think I'll pass this around the room and everybody can kind of answer this question. When you're playing with a band, one of your own songs, you're kind of counting on them to help you shape that song. And I wonder if you could talk about what Tarek and Joe contribute to your piece, Happy Belated, that we heard to start off.
Joe just learned that. No, we've been playing that for a while. That's a song. It's off my last record, just called Out and About, with Allison Miller and Ben Allison and John Ellis on it. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I played this same song with the Stan Moore Trio last week, and it's like a different thing a little bit every time, and these guys have so much confidence and just, you know, make it sound like they've known it for years. And
we've known it for at least two.
About, like, he hits the cymbal or something. I'm not going to go into that stuff.
But, well, I think everybody here has varying degrees of comfort with letting go of their idea of what the sound of the song should be. Mm-hmm. And you know, the more material there is written down, the more constrained everybody is. That's that particular song. There's a melody, and then the rest of it is pretty fluid. There's not much concrete you have to play this, and so there's a lot of room for our personalities to sort of insert themselves. Like Joe's tune, Duo 4, has a little more composed, mm-hmm. and so we kind of have to honor what he's written a little bit more than Will's tune.
Joe, do you feel your song was honored?
I'll never work with these two again. I just like the way Will writes. He writes odd clusters. Nothing's, you know, not your standard jazz. He writes nice little clusters, and on the organ it works out real well. And then I get to smash the thing and make noise happen. The trickiest part is keeping with some of these odd time signatures. He's really good at it. He's great at it too. But I don't do that a hell of a lot on the organ, so I have to sweat a little bit as we hit the 5/4s and the 6/4s and all.
Well, one thing, when you play, I play with a lot of organ trios and mm-hmm. groups of organ, is they're kicking the bass, they're playing the bass with their left hand and their feet. So it's a different approach to playing bass. Like, so sometimes you have to modify the bass lines to
yes,
work.
Yes, exactly. I have to.
And that's part of an organist's job, I guess, a lot of times, is figure out what really works on the bass mm-hmm. part, right?
Yeah. Because if it doesn't groove, there's no point in...
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Tarek, your song was the last one we heard. How did they do?
It did great. I mean, that's another one. That's a happy orchestra tune, and it's been played to death at this point. But there's the way it's structured, you know, there's three different tempos, and it kind of has to be that way. And then there's the melody, and it kind of has to be that way. But from there, it's all soloing. And so I guess the foundation of it sounds pretty much the same every time, but within each of those sections, everybody gets to like make their statement. And that's kind of the point of the song. So yeah, it worked.
Okay, one more question that we can share around the room here a little bit regarding playing for an audience. Now, when you travel around the world, you travel around even the city here, you can wind up with similar but very different folks in your room. And I wonder if you have a habit of reading the room and try to play for that specific audience, or if you're preferring to bring them into the world of Will Bernard or Tarek or Joe. Will, you want to start that one? How do you deal with an audience?
Well, when you play in a group like this that's very flexible, I think that reading the room is very important, because sometimes we'll play to a sit-down group, and then sometimes people want to dance or be party or something, and they're like younger crowd, you know. So I think we gauge our material kind of around that, you know.
I agree.
Like tonight we're playing at the Goodfoot which is kind of a.
It could be a lot of this. Kind of a dance, but it's probably going to be a lot of
dance. People like the dancer, you know, so.
Yeah, it really. You want to serve the room, right? Because I mean, that's the whole point of the thing is that.
Entertainment business.
Yeah, we're entertaining, and it's more fun for us. You know, if we're not doing what will make the crowd most engaged, then they're going to check out. And there's nothing worse than playing for a checked out crowd.
That's true.
So it makes it more fun to get them to come back. Yeah, it makes it more fun for us if they're engaged, whether that means dancing or a seated crowd that's like really, you know, enjoying what they're seeing. And then it's more fun for us. And it's this loop. So, it's the most important thing when we're up there.
Oh, it worked for me. I thought that was great as your designated audience member. Let's hear it once more. Will Bernard, Tarek Adizay, Joe Dorian.